Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest podcast, we wrap up an eventful fall portion of the wraparound season and take a look ahead at the match between Tiger and Phil.
My God, my swing feels like an unfolded lawn chair.
Well, why do they even have water if you're not supposed to hit it there?
Because it's fun! We're having fun!
What is this, custom? Mine's off the rack.
I wish Tiger Woods was here to help me with this.
We'll do it live!
Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Alex Myers. Today I'm joined by Sam Wyman, Hallie Ledbetter. Guys, you know, we talk about the fall and how, you know, it's tough to get into and this and that with the wraparound schedule and all that. And I know this is, we're not just going to talk about PGA Tour here. We're talking about the European Tour, the LPGA. But the last couple weeks have been incredible. I mean, they've given us these amazing stories. And I guess we'll start with Charles Howell III. You know, obviously known as a guy who just doesn't win, but right. You know, has a great
11
living.
Years.
Right. And yeah, first win in over 11 years. I mean, and you could see the emotions right away. That's what's so cool about some of these wins recently. I don't know, Sam, what did you think?
You know, it's happened? Funny. Like, part of me wants to say that these past few weeks, the guys who have won shows how difficult it is to win on the PGA Tour when you have a guy like Charles Howell, who hasn't won in 11 years, and Kuchar hadn't won in 4 years, and Lee Westwood and Danny. Well, but then the fact that all of them won in such quick succession, mm-hmm. and they all broke their droughts, like, well, how hard could it be if all these guys got off the schneid when they did? But super impressive, and all in their own way, super emotional wins.
Yeah, very much so. I thought it was Charles Howell's third first win as a father, and his kids were like not.
Yeah,
little.
They're big.
You know?
I was trying to look that up. Okay, so his kids are younger than
the
11 years. Yeah, I couldn't tell in the picture.
Yeah, no. They're definitely younger.
The boy is like, six
and
or
how cute was that?
Yeah.
He was crying.
Yeah,
it was awesome. Really special.
That was great. Now, Hal, your dad worked with Charles.
He did,
at some point. What, you have some memories of crossing paths?
Yeah, I do. I remember at the academy growing up, my dad worked with Charles quite a bit from when he was younger for quite a number of years. I don't know when they stopped working together, but such a nice guy and what a work ethic he had. I remember my friends and I would just kind of, there was a hedge between like where my dad would teach his lessons and then where the rest of us would practice. And we'd just kind of like stand peeking over the hedge just to watch Charles hit balls because that guy had what an action he has.
Well, tell me if you think this is fair, because my mind immediately goes to, when I think of Charles Howell III, is that he sort of embodied the dynamic of the perfect golf swing and fair or not, unable to put it all together. You know, if you subscribe to the notion that certain guys know how to play golf and certain guys just have great golf swings, there was a divide between the two. Is that fair?
Totally. I think that's fair. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it sounds like, based on his comments, even he would acknowledge that he had a lot of failures in getting over the hump, and that, you know, just having the goods is not enough. There's an intangible quality that goes with winning that he, for a number of years, was looking for.
Yeah. I don't remember how many. I heard on the broadcast yesterday, I think Brandel Chambly said something about how many times, like, he had a significant amount of times that he was leading through 54 holes.
And five.
Okay, yeah. So 5 times.
This was his first time converting.
And could never just get it done. And he almost didn't even get it. Like, yesterday, he got off to a bad start.
Yeah. Well, that just made it even crazier yesterday. Yeah. The bogey, double bogey start. He even admitted, and Sam, I mean, you're a big mental guru here.
Thank you for saying
he even admitted that he started to say, oh, I've seen this movie again, you know, before. And which to me is amazing then. And he was able to recover from not only the slow start, but then having those thoughts creep in your head. I mean, and then, you know, he had a buried lie in a bunker. He had a tee shot in the fairway that wound up in a divot, which he actually made a birdie from. That kind of got him going.
Right. And meanwhile, you've got Patrick Cantley Patrick Rogers
lighting
it up.
Every hole. Yeah, I know, exactly. I mean, it could have been a big day for him as well, but just an incredible. I mean, Charles Howell, if you look at it, because and Justin Leonard and who was on the call, Rich Lerner, they both kept talking about it. They're like, this doesn't look like a guy who has trouble winning, because down the stretch, he birdied 15, he birdied 16, he hit it to like 5 feet on 17, made birdie, and then 18, and then the and the first playoff hole, he lipped out putts, basically. Or not lipped out, but like great. Like he almost birdied the last six or seven holes here. I mean, right. He looked so confident.
When you think about a guy who has trouble winning, you think of a guy who, like, at the first whiff of adversity, yeah, starts playing really tentative,
right,
and, you know, leaving putts well short and kind of having indecisive tee shots. And that wasn't the case at all with him.
No. Crazy career, obviously, because, like you said, Sam, he's kind of a can't-miss guy. He was the, you know, college player of the year at Oklahoma State. He was rookie of the year on tour. He won pretty quickly. He added a second win, you know, a couple years later. What's crazy is that he's never had, and I think the next guy we're going to talk about is Danny Willett. He's never had, like, a drop like Danny Willett.
Right,
a rise back. Or even, you know, Lee Westwood. I mean, he's never had, he's always been just a really solid player.
Oh, I think also he hasn't finished outside like 77th in the FedEx Cup.
Exactly. Like, right. I mean, he never has a bad year. Yeah. It's just he never quite wins. And like, I just looked up, he's played in 45 majors. He has one top 10, and it was a T10 at the PGA right. Championship 2003. So it's like, it's a conundrum, though, because, like, how can you be so good
right.
but not ever be really good?
Well, if you look at his career, if you disregarded what the expectations were of him and
right.
just looked at his career on its own merits, you'd say, guy's had a very solid PGA Tour career. Like you said, he's never been outside the top 70, you know, keeps his card every year. Well, he's won $37 million.
Amazing.
That's a very solid PGA
right.
Tour career. But I remember when he first came out on tour,
right.
you know, he was kind of one of these young guns.
Yeah, he was the next big star.
And so, you know, put in that context, arguably disappointing. And
right.
so, but it just shows that, you know, guys constantly go after it and constantly, you know, maybe there's a resurgence late in his career.
Yeah. No, and Hallie, it's great that you mentioned how hard he worked, because that was a lot of the comments yesterday. People said that, how happy they were for him, not only because it had been a long time and because his kids hadn't seen him win, but because he still works that hard. Someone was saying on Twitter, like, he works 365 a year. He works on vacation. It's either in the gym or whatever, that he works that hard. And you would think, I don't know, a lot of people, I think, would have this quick judgment that a guy who was a can't-miss guy gets on tour, wins a couple times early,
mm-hmm.
and then just kind of says coasts and, like, well, whatever, I'll make my $2 million a year and do nothing spectacular. But that's not the case. Like, he's busting his butt. So mm-hmm. that's great that you said that going back. Also, interesting note, his wife's name is Heather Myers.
Wow.
M-Y-E-R-S. I got to look up if maybe I'm related.
That's right.
Somehow.
So you can get in on the
Thanksgiving. Coming
yeah,
up?
It's coming up.
I'm trying to get the invite.
Exactly.
Cousin Alex.
All right, I mentioned Danny Willett, so let's talk about Danny Willett a little, because, again, unlike Charles Howell, I mean, well, Danny Willett has reached the peaks in terms of winning the Masters, winning a major, and then within 2 years later, or a year later, he's, like, off the map, falls as low as, what was it, 470-something in the world? 462 in the world
yeah.
ranking.
I mean, the quote from him after he won yeah. yesterday is amazing. I was in a very, very dark place. There was no light coming through the trees. Just a big fucking, excuse my language, fucking stump in front of my ball. I was despising golf because it was like Groundhog Day. Turn up, be in pain, and repeat. You know, it's amazing. Is like,
amazing.
And even when he won the Masters, it was not Danny Willett won the Masters. Let's be happy for Danny Willett.
Right.
It was in the context of
Jordan
Spieth having
yep.
this epic collapse.
Yep.
And then pretty soon after
yep.
that win for Willett, there was, you know, he really struggled.
Right.
For, you know, and then if you recall, he had this horrible Ryder Cup experience going into the Ryder Cup where
yep.
his brother made a big stir
yep.
earlier in the week. He had a terrible week. And so it's like he never even got to enjoy
the spoils of
victory.
Yeah.
Right away it was like he didn't deserve it, and then he kind of fell off the map.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible that a guy who, you know, and again, we see this in golf because the careers are so long, they go through these cycles, but like he lost it so quickly, and now it seems like he's gained it back so quickly. I mean, he was up to 276th in the world, which is nothing great, but again, he'd climbed 100 spots already. I've started to see his name on these leaderboards over in Europe, but to win the season finale, you know, it's a pretty clear indicator that this guy's back. He's working with Sean Foley, who, by the way, throwing Justin Rose, number one in the world.
Talking
he's
about
a Cameron
resurgence.
Champ.
Yeah.
He's having, you know, so many resurgences going on. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Dane Willard, always have a soft spot in my heart for him for winning that
That's
match.
That's right. For guys, for personal profit.
66-1 on $10. Dane Willard.
Right, right.
It's my man. So, and my buddy and I, who always, we bet on him for like three tournaments and majors in a row. We might have to start betting on him again because he's on the.
Odds are going
to
be still pretty good for him. Back. By the way, just one other thing about Danny Willard, because you know how I love all the mental stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
He talked about his work with Foley. The other thing is, we didn't set any golf goals, just that I could finish the season healthy.
Yeah.
Which, you know, to me, like a recipe for freeing yourself up is to kind of set low expectations and just play golf. So if that's your standard of success, you're not feeling the pressure of trying to contend for majors or what. You're just trying to play. And so that leads to, I think, ultimately leads to playing better golf when you feel like you're having some positive momentum and you're achieving what little goal you have.
Again, we talked a little about this, but he makes this comeback after it really wasn't that long of a drought, because like the week before Lee Westwood wins and it's years, but Willett's win seems like a bigger surprise to me, but it's part of this whole, I have this list here of guys who won this year after droughts. I mean, you talk about Phil Mickelson, obviously Tiger Woods, of course, but Phil Mickelson, Lee Westwood, obviously Matt Kuchar. I mean, it's Kevin Na. Like, you go on and on. It's like, like you said, Sam, part of me is like, is it tough to win, or why all of a sudden now can these guys win?
Right. How tough can it be to win if all these guys who couldn't win are now winning?
They're all winning, and they're all older. Although Danny Willett's only 31. That's the crazy. Well, I guess, which, Hallie, of all those guys winning this year, let's take Tiger out of it, because I think we all would agree his win's the most unlikely. What's the most surprising? I guess
I'd stick with Danny Willett.
Yeah.
For
okay.
Sure.
I mean, because as a competitive golfer, when you kind of lose it, how hard it is to get back.
Yeah, it's gone. And I think what you, to your point, Sam, as far as having low expectations, I think when you get in a place like that, you're like, okay, I just got to find something controllable, and where he can focus on his workouts or his eating habits or all those things that he can focus on, and then gain some sort of confidence from that, because his confidence wasn't going to come from his golf game.
Right.
And then so if he can gain confidence from that, then maybe he can kind of seep into his golf game.
Right. And all these guys are incredible talents. We're not talking about like kind
of
slower echelon players.
So
if they can kind of get out of their own way, I mean, Matt Kuchar, Lee Westwood, former number one player in the world, Charles Howell, you know, future star.
Right.
So they all have the ingredients that could make them great players.
And like you said, Sam, when Willett won the Masters, it was so overlooked because of Spieth's collapse that people forgot Willett was ranked, I think, 12th coming into the Masters.
Yeah, he was on the up.
Like he was – people made it like he was this unheard of guy. So a couple other guys this year won up after huge droughts. Paul Casey, again, very talented guys. Keegan Bradley, Ian Poulter. So just pretty amazing. On the women's side, you know, it had only been
a year.
About a year, but Lexi Thompson had you know, we expect her to dominate. She had a really tough season, and you know, she took a sabbatical, and she had the whole thing on Instagram with struggling with body image and everything else. And we get word that she splits with her caddy before this week, and she puts her brother on the bag. She wins by 4 shots. I mean, what?
It
was crazy.
I know, and what a way to finish the year.
Yeah.
Her one win.
Yeah.
She gets it done in the last event, which was really cool, especially because she's been going through so much on and off the golf course. That was really great to see.
Yeah, and of course, you know, she gets the victory, but Arya Jitanagarn wins
the sweep.
Every single award.
What did she win? She won Player of the Year, which she had locked up, I think, with like still three tournaments
weeks ago.
There's a thing called the Leader Award for the most top tens, the Annika Award for the best performances in majors, the VAR Trophy for the lowest scoring average, Leader on the money list, and then the Race to the CME Globe for the extra
And see what
million
you
dollars.
Said before we went on the air. I think it's a valid point.
I just find it so interesting that, I mean, if a guy would have won that amount of awards on the PGA Tour, money winner and best performance in majors and the FedEx Cup and all those things, people would be losing their minds. And it's for the women, it's just so overlooked. I just think it's kind of sad.
You're right.
It's an uphill battle. It really
is. It is sad. And Lexi's 23. She's turning 23 next week, I think I saw. So, I mean, these are young stars who you could, you know, build around. And
absolutely.
Well, you're right. It should get more attention. I also like that they give out an award for most top tens. I think the PGA should do that.
The Matt Kuchar Award?
The what?
The Matt Kuchar Award.
It could be the Matt Kuchar Award. Perfect. Let's name it. Because you get more people to play more, too, maybe. They are going to give the bonus now for the regular season money, which, again, I think is good, too. I don't know. I like people being rewarded for the whole body. Speaking of, not to jump back, but Will It wins and Francesco Molinari wraps up the Race to Dubai, the year-long thing, finishing T26, and no one's going crazy about how, oh, someone who finished T26 wins, you know, because it's the same thing as the FedEx Cup, essentially.
Right. Sure.
So do you have a problem with that?
I mean, I can think that far back. I guess I do. Yeah. Because, you know, in theory, you want there to be enough juice in the final event where how you play. You know, you should at least finish in the top 10. So when Rose won the FedEx Cup, he finished right behind Tiger. Yeah, yeah. So no one had a real problem with that. But I feel like if you finish that far back, well, then it sort of takes the juice out of the entire final event. That said, of course, major champion had a great season.
Yeah.
You do want to reward that as well. I just feel like you got to get to a point where that final event has a little bit more weight.
Yeah. Well, I think the way they do it, obviously, is a lot different because, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Tommy Fleetwood was the only person that could have caught him. And, you know, so they were making all these jokes about, you know, Mollywood and all that and how they love each other. And he only finished like T12.
Right.
So, yeah.
But would you go to like PGA Tour lengths and like stagger people?
I don't like that.
I don't either.
Because
that
like we were doing our farewell cup on the putting green.
It all goes back.
Presented
to that.
By Dos Toros.
Right.
Not really. And Coleman had such a huge lead. And then we all started joking, you know what though? We're making that last one worth like 10 times. And like that would be the only chance that we would have of winning. But I didn't want that to happen because I feel bad if he got it taken from him.
Maybe. I wouldn't feel so bad. I'd get over really quickly.
You didn't feel bad for Bryson, who won those first two events and then just didn't even come close in the Tour Championship.
No, because I feel like it's got to be some level over all four events.
Well, again, that's fine now because they are going to give at least an award. Not that these guys need the money anyway, but they are going to give some award or distinction for winning during the regular season.
Right.
And that will – so
– But my point is that, again, you're trying to get – again, not to always bring it back to the FedEx Cup, but you're trying to make the FedEx Cup something that you really want to watch and really are intrigued by. Right?
Yeah.
And so, okay, so you have your regular season. You've awarded the player who plays the best in the regular season. So that part is handled, which I think is smart. Now, how do we create a scenario in which you give some level of reward to the player who achieves through the first part of it or plays well through the first part of it, but still have enough drama in the final event? I think it's the best solution that they've come up with so far.
Well, you're right. You're saying the final event. I mean, you could say then the penultimate event was a huge drama because Molinari and Fleetwood distanced themselves. I don't know. I see both things now. It's like the playoffs in regular season in any sport. I mean, it's totally separate, I guess. Not to get too bogged down, but it actually raised an interesting question, which I hadn't even thought of, but there are a few golf writers out there touting it because of the golf writers' vote for player of the year.
Right.
Is there actually a choice now between Molinari and Brooks Koepka? Because, and I know it sounds crazy, because Koepka has the two majors, and then he won again. It's a year instead of a
season.
Year.
It's the year it's 2018.
But Molinari won, obviously, the Open Championship. He won another PGA Tour event. He won the flagship European Tour event.
Right.
He won one other.
He won Bridgestone, right? No, he won
one other European Tour event.
And
now he wins the Race to Dubai.
Right, and he was Ryder Cup hero.
And he's the Ryder Cup hero. And so that's what I was going to say. I guess it depends on how much you weigh the Ryder Cup into this. Because if you're counting it as like a major, and he goes 5-0 and has a historic – I don't know. What do you think?
Oh, it's so rife with complications because it really is about U.S. versus European
bias. Oh, my
bias.
God. It's going to
so
be –
So if you come from a – and I'm not – tell me if I'm painting with a broad brush here, European listeners. But from a European perspective, you won the biggest tournament there is, which is the Open Championship.
Yes,
and then you performed – you outperformed anyone in the second biggest event there is. Okay? And so if I am a European golf fan or a European golf writer, I can see why I would vote for Francesco Molinari. On the other side of it, two majors is still a huge flipping deal.
Yeah.
And he won another event. He's the number one player in the world.
Yeah.
Or he was the number one player in the world.
So, yeah.
So
Yeah, and Molinari didn't get to one. I mean, I guess Koepka started a little higher, but still. I don't know. You do have a vote, so who? I do,
God,
too.
Put me on the
you
spot.
Do, too. What, who would you vote for?
I'm so torn. I've got dual citizenship.
Yeah,
in
I mean,
Europe,
that's what I wanted.
And America. So I'm really torn. Without thinking it through, I would just be like, two majors,
two majors, yeah.
But
it would be such a slap in the face of Brooks Koepka,
yeah,
who constantly doesn't,
oh,
get
God,
enough credit.
Oh, God, it'd be amazing.
It would be,
just
yeah.
From, yeah, he thinks. All right, so you're torn.
Yeah, I'm
when,
torn.
When it was first suggested, I like laughed. I was like, this is absurd. And then I got into it a little more, and I was like, all right, I guess it depends how much you consider the Ryder Cup. I'm with Sam. I think overall, in general, Americans don't put as much weight on the Ryder Cup as Europeans, and it's treated more as like, eh, it's a great event to watch. Don't get me wrong, but it's like, I don't hold it as a like a major. But then I thought a little more about it, and I was like, he did play 5 matches, won them all, and if you play a tournament, you know, you play 4 rounds. So, like, mm-hmm. it is like a full
yeah.
tournament's worth of work that he did. It's close.
The other thing about
I
it,
I think
though,
I'd still go Koepka.
Here's the other argument against Molinari, yeah. which is that the Europeans won by such a decisive margin. If he went 5-0 and it was a nail biter, you could say he was the difference
right.
in Europe winning the Ryder Cup.
Yeah,
and he certainly was a played
but
a huge role.
But that's not his fault.
I get it. But my point yeah. is that it's like, you know, it's not like he won the Ryder Cup on his own for
right.
Europe.
Here's the problem too, though. Brooks Koepka, who did, you know, obviously work his way up in Europe. He didn't participate in the race to Dubai. Mm-hmm. He could have won that. Who knows? I'm just saying. And they both did in the FedEx Cup. And I think Brooks Koepka finished ahead of Molinari in that. And, you know, so it's tough. I could see. But I could see the arguments. And I could see the John Huggins of the world voting for Francesco Molinari.
It'd be interesting. Actually, it more intrigued to the golf writer.
It will. It, right. More than either the LPGA player of the year or the, you know, those are slam dunks. But now we actually have some intrigue.
By the way, do you know my favorite Golf Writers Association player of the year story? I told you this story right before.
I don't know. Maybe.
So it's 2010. I don't know if I can tell this on the air, but I will. 2010, Tiger Woods is returning to play at the Masters after his sex scandal, right? And so the Golf Writers Dinner, the way it works is they give out writing awards as well to different writers. So Tiger Woods won PGA Tour Player of the Year for 2009.
Oh, my God, you've told
me. He won 5 times in 2009. And so and then obviously the scandal happened after that. And he returned to play his first event at the Masters 2010. So he goes to the Golf Writers Dinner Wednesday night before the Masters, and he's there to receive his award for Player of the Year. And I forget exactly the timing, but Tiger gets up and he makes a really heartfelt speech about, you know, it's great to be back playing golf and I really love the game and this has been a very difficult time for me. And he goes back down. And then they start handing out the writing awards. And every award for that year was like, you know, Alex Myers, not really. Alex Myers from Golf Digest for Tiger Woods is an utter disgrace. And, you know, Sam Wyman from Golf Digest, Tiger Woods yeah. should be ashamed of
yeah.
himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, it was
that's
great.
Incredible. Yeah.
Was it just like a 30 minutes of cringe?
Well, I you know,
he left.
I think, in fairness, the
he
guys
left.
Usually come get their they
yeah.
make their speech and they leave. But it was
okay.
just the irony of it was.
But
so
it was
classic.
Still pretty funny. He could have still been like, you know, walking yeah. out the back when Tim Rosenfort's announcing the awards. That is amazing.
Oh my God.
Okay, speaking of Tiger, we got to talk about the match. It is finally here. The match, all
the
capital.
Match.
Letters. We're excited. Friday, 3:00 Eastern,
mm-hmm.
12 local time at Shadow Creek in Las Vegas. And I want to go through some prop bets with you guys, see what you guys think. But first, to start off, well, we'll save our predictions till the end.
Okay.
All right, we'll save our predictions to the end. Let's just say, though, that Tiger is -200 right now, according to Westgate, which means you'd have to risk 200 to win 100. Phil's +170 means you risk 100 to win 170. So obviously, he's a pretty big underdog. Okay, here's some of the prop bets, though. First of all, this is just absurd. Will there be a hole in one? Yes, +550, so like 5 to 5.5 to 1. No, -1,000. I mean,
yeah, there's not gonna be one.
There's not gonna be a hole in one. I would bet anything, everything I have on that.
Right. I mean.
Right.
But although.
Like, what, are there like 10 par threes at Shadow Creek?
Yeah, or of like, I don't you know. They're setting up the golf course for optimal drama.
They probably will if there's like a bowl.
So maybe more so than.
But still, like a 1 to 10 bet. I mean, it,
right.
You know,
Tiger Woods has how many PGA Tour holes in
like
one?
Like two?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. How many side bets? And we're all interested in the side bets that's going to be going on. That's supposed to differentiate this and why people want to pay $20. How many side bets will be made by Tiger and Phil? Over, under 12?
That we know about.
Five. But well, in theory, we're going to know.
Yeah, oh, right, yeah, right, right.
Well, in theory, we're going to know about any side bet they make. But you're right. It's possible they're even doing stuff off the table. But 12.5. What do you guys think?
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Side bets.
It feels like a lot. Yeah, like, it's like a lot. It seems like a lot of effort to get that many in.
I agree. I think.
What would be an example of a side bet? Like,
well, closest to the pin.
Closest to the pin, like right. Longest drive.
Who knows? Maybe they both. Yeah, longest drive. Who knows? Maybe they both end up. You know, sometimes you end up in a similar spot as someone you're both chipping, and you say like,
chip,
"Oh, who's closer?" Or like, who gets up and down? I don't know, stuff like that. Yeah, what like? Oh, Tiger said that. You know, that was so funny when Phil was on the NBA game a few weeks ago, and he starts talking, and Kevin Harlan was like, he starts talking about, "Oh, make a bet with Tiger for like 100,000 and Kevin Harlan's like, "Oh, 100,000 Tiger on the HBO 24/7 was like, "You know, I bet like a hundy," and he was talking about 100. So I think they're coming at it from like a little different in terms of betting. I know Tiger used to bet, I guess, on blackjack, but I still think, I don't know, and I still think he's not. You're right. I think the 12.5 is a lot. There's 18 holes if they even make it to 18. Although I think
they'll play 18.
It's match play.
Don't they do a press?
They're both predicting that they're going to close it out on 17.
But are they going to do like a press?
I think no matter what, they'll bet something on 18. But still, 18 holes, 12 and a half bets seems like
a lot of side bets.
Yeah. And I think Phil will be like trying to push Tiger, but I think Tiger will be a little like, I just want to win the match.
Yeah,
I want
the
match. $9 million.
Yeah. He'll happily lose every side bet if he wins the match.
Exactly.
What do you guys think of Phil's social media up to this point with his whole like haircut thing that he posted?
So not to be such a cynic, but I would ask the question, to what extent is Phil finally embracing social media and is in it because it's fun and he's trying to connect with fans? And to what extent, you're shaking your head, what extent is it because he's trying to drum up interest in something he has a vested interest
100%.
I don't know if that's him, to be honest. I don't know if that's actually him. I've never really interacted with Phil too much, but I just don't know if I can picture him writing "Filling Fabulous."
Well, I think he's got to endorse it though. So even
he's
if he's
got
not,
oh no, totally, yeah, he yeah, probably yeah. is like handing his phone to his agent or something, right. Like, here you go, like get some buzz.
So he gets some level of credit for it, even if he's not exactly the one conceiving the idea, because he's like, yeah, it's fun, I'll do it.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean. By the way,
I mean, he did do. I will.
Noticed I'm not plugged in here. I'm just like listening to dead air, like an idiot. I look like an idiot.
High tech.
Very high
tech podcast.
Because I don't. You don't even have headphones.
I know.
On.
I'm not.
We are sitting right next to each other.
Well, I would just go back. Then all my doubts go away when I just go back to the commercial that he did.
Right.
Yeah.
He didn't conceive that idea.
No.
Probably.
Yeah. No. No. I think he. I mean, the timing's too coincidental not to. I mean, he literally started the Twitter account the day Tiger confirmed the match. Then he started the Instagram. I didn't even know he started the Instagram account. Of course, he's an instant follow. I don't care how cheesy it is. It's still an instant follow. He started that like last week. So it's obviously drawing up interest for the match. But I still, you know, whatever. I still think it's
entertaining. Well, the real test is to what extent will he carry it after this. I guess there'll be more matches and things like that.
That's
so
true.
He has, you know, has an interest in being relevant.
Okay, then the amount of the largest side bet. Here's an interesting one. Over, under 50,000.
I would say, do you think they have their own side bet that's probably like over a significant portion of the match? Like they bet like a back nine or something like that.
Oh, you think they'll do that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If that counts as a side bet, then I would say it's going to be more.
Okay, I don't know if that does. The thing I would stipulate here is, Is this on, and they should do a better job with these prop bets, specifying them. Is this how much is offered or accepted? Because, again, I think Phil is going to throw out 100,000, but then if Tiger negotiates
No, it has to be accepted. It has to be like
accepted?
What the agreed-upon bet is.
Okay, agreed-upon bet. So what do you think?
Maybe at the most 50.
Okay. I think they're going to do at least one bet over that. I would take that over. Because, again, if Phil right away talked about, I mean, he's talking a big game, but betting like 100,000. They're playing for $9 million.
Right.
Yeah.
What if one of them is up like five up at the turn?
Yeah. Then they're gonna, it's going to get
I'll
nutty.
I'll let you win some of your money back. Yeah. And like, yeah, I'll let you, you know, bet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They again, not to be cynical, but they have a vested interest in making it as interesting as possible.
Right.
So
they also might, who knows, Phil might give the hole-in-one odds to, you know, I'll give you 10 to 1 on a 100,000 if you make a home. Yeah, I don't know. They could do something something crazy. All right.
Red shirt, you have that one?
We're getting to that.
Okay.
Yeah, we're getting to that. All right, we do red shirt. Red shirt, Tiger Woods. It's plus 350. It's an underdog that he's going to wear a red shirt. Minus 600 is the favorite that he will not wear a red shirt.
Yeah, I think he doesn't wear one.
I don't think he will either. What do you think?
I kind of think he will. I think he's going to play into it.
I'm back and forth on it. On one hand, it's
super cheesy.
It's super cheesy if he does. But on the other hand, it's always cheesy that he does it.
Yeah.
Now at this point in his career, I mean, I love it. Don't get me wrong. I mean, when we see it, we all nuts. And if he does show up in red, everybody's going to go, it's over. Tiger wins. Like yeah. blowout. Bet Tiger. But I, the fact that Vegas is making it an underdog makes me think that they're going to get a lot of suckers like Chris Powers betting on it happening.
Right.
So I don't know.
Because people think, Tiger, big event. You're not looking in the intricacies. Yeah. It's not really a big event. It's not Sunday, et cetera, et cetera.
I think he's going to wear blue. A friend pointed out this year he wears a lot more blue this year.
Blue?
Brittany is nodding in agreement. I think
with shoulder pads? What are you pointing at?
Baseball shoulders.
I don't know what that
blue
means.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'm going with blue.
Like those, like Sergeant Pepper's, like those
shoulder pads.
Yeah.
little yes. Like, what are those things called off the side?
Yeah.
I don't know. Tassels.
Yes, tassels.
Oh, tassels. Yeah. I don't know about that. All right. Curse words said by Tiger and Phil. Over under 21.5.
Wait. First of all, do we need to have a clarification? What's a curse word?
That's a great point. I mean, yeah, you're right. You need to specify this.
Right. So, like Jiminy Crickets for Phil. Yeah, right.
Golly gee, Willikers from Matt Kuchar. Yeah, 21.5. That's a lot. But part of me thinks like Phil is gonna like just go nuts, Carson, and Tiger's gonna want to be sound cool.
I'm gonna say under. I still feel like they're trying to market it as a
exactly. And I still think like they're even though it's Vegas, even though it's gambling, I still think their people would tell them like guys like
well,
act kind of.
Here's another question. This is an even better question. Is over the course of a PGA Tour round, since players are never mic'd for all 18 holes in a PGA Tour round, what is the average number of curse words? Oh, I mean, definitely
point.
The
think average, about yourself.
I was just gonna say.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I definitely curse more than 21 times on a.
I don't know if I curse 21.5 times, but I definitely curse like 10 times around.
10.
So if you times that by two, you're right there.
Yeah. But again, I think they have a mic on, and then
right, are they more or less likely to curse because they're mic'd?
I don't think Tiger when he's mic'd that I haven't really heard him curse very much when he is mic'd. I think
he used to get fined like all the time.
Right, yeah. Exactly. But so I don't know if he would do it in this sense too, since all the people are gonna be tuning in.
I say less. I think inherently you are censoring yourself.
Too.
He's gonna be reserved, like in some level.
Okay. All right, final one, and this is my favorite one. Total times Tiger Woods twirls his club. Over, under, 3.5. I mean, over. It's
yeah, over.
Close.
I think 3.5 is ridiculous.
3.5 is nothing. Although, again, that kind of scares me. Like, do they know? Does Vegas know? Whenever I see a line that's
like studying video
like
of his last few rounds.
Yeah, 3.5. I mean, he might do that on like one hole.
Yeah.
And again, there's an element of intimidation that it factors into it, which would lead you to believe that he would do it more. So I think more, yes.
All right, over under.
Like you're doing, you're trying to show the guy up by hitting a great shot.
That's my favorite bet. Hammer that over 3.5. Tiger's going to.
All right, there you go.
Before we go on, let me talk for a second about Golf Digest Schools. Golf Digest Schools is our new cutting edge video instruction platform, offering more than 250 classes on every part of the game, and featuring the leading teachers in golf. From Butch Harmon to David Ledbetter to Michael Breed. Unlike the quick tips you can find across the internet, these are full game improvement programs meant to be followed step by step as if you were working with a pro. It's like Masterclass meets Netflix, but even better because there's the added promise of feedback. To sign up for Golf Digest Schools, go to golfdigest.com/allaccess and use promo code SCHOOLS to get 30% off an annual subscription. Again, golfdigest.com/allaccess and use promo code SCHOOLS.
All right. It is Thanksgiving week. I just want to quickly ask you guys, what are the golf things that you are thankful for?
Wow. Besides the match?
Besides the match, yeah.
I mean, I'm going to get cheesy. I guess I would say for me and Holly, you both experienced, I get to play a lot with my boys. Like, my boys are both of an age where we play a lot of golf together. And from a, you know, sharing the game I love, stuff like that, is great, but also it's like a built-in excuse to play a lot of golf. It's like, oh, you know, Charlie really wants to play golf today. You know, someone's got to drive him, so I'm going to play. So it's actually the best thing that that's happened to my golf game in a long time.
I'd have to say this around this time would be I'm going home tomorrow to Florida to be with my family, and playing with my brothers is going to be really fun, so kind of along the lines as you. We don't spend too much time together off, like if we're not on a golf course. So we yell at each other a lot, but we still have fun.
Mm-hmm.
So
I thought you were going to say having a world-class instructor as your dad, because I would be thankful for that.
Yeah, I'm thankful for that most of the time. Most of the time when I, yeah.
All right. You know what I'm going to say. Two words, Tiger Woods. I'm thankful for Tiger Woods. He is back this year. It has been so much fun watching him, so much fun talking about him, writing about him. You know, we have very animated Slack channel when he's playing. It's, you know, the activity is about up 1,000%, I'd say. So anyway, Tiger, thanks for coming back. You've been awesome this year. All right, enough of the sappy shit. All right, turkey. I wanted to say give a couple turkeys of the year, a little less, you know, sappy here.
What is a turkey?
Kind of a you know, a clown.
Knucklehead.
Oh, okay, cool.
So I have a huge list.
Sam
I'm
Wyman.
Not going to go through the list. I'm going to just pick out the three tour guys who are on here, and I want to see who you think. Okay, Patrick Reed for a million different things, from throwing the team under the bus, the Ryder Cup, bitching about his seats at the Fenway Park. What was the other thing? Oh, getting the European Tour camera crew ejected. That's one. Phil Mickelson, love you, Phil, but the – hitting the moving ball at the U.S. Open was one of the biggest headlines of the year.
I think even he would say, like, that's a turkey move, right, for
definitely,
sure.
Definitely.
He acknowledged.
Oh, then I have J.B. Holmes taking 4 minutes, 10 seconds to play the shot on 18 at Torrey Pines. And then Tony Finau, who, again, you're going to say, Tony Finau, he's amazing. He had a breakout season. He dislocated his ankle at the Masters Part 3. He looked like a complete idiot. I mean, that was
kind of badass putting it back in.
Total badass.
And he played.
Totally redeemed himself.
So that's the only one I would take exception with.
Okay, fine.
It's a turkey move, but he redeemed himself.
It was a turkey move, though, because, you know, the famous Martin Gramatica, the kicker who tore his ACL celebrating. That's like, it was okay, but we'll take him out then. Who's the turkey of the year of those three guys? Phil, Patrick Reed, J.B. Holmes.
Patrick Reed, 100%.
Wow. Well, yeah, and I think it's like
it's a body of work.
It's a body of work. It's really, I mean, like a turkey of the year can be. Yeah. First of all, turkey of the year is a person. There's turkey moves of the year. Some guys made like the Holmes thing.
That's
Phil
a great
moving
point.
And hitting a moving
yes.
putt. Finau,
they were moments.
They were like those were knucklehead
you're right.
moments.
Like cumulative.
Right.
Right.
Right. It. Yeah. Patrick. Okay. I guess that was an easy question. Sorry. All right. I probably should have given some of the other guys, like Ray Romano. He almost killed Jordan Spieth at. at Pebble Beach, you know, that kind of stuff. Okay, we are almost done here, but we wanted to get I wanted to give us Nugget of the Week. And actually, the Nugget of the Week comes from me this week, of all people. I came up with a good little stat. Charles Howell, he had last won, it was a span of 333 starts. And I thought, that sounds familiar. And I looked it up. To put that in perspective, Tiger Woods, in his entire career, PGA Tour has made 343 starts.
That's amazing.
So basically, Charles Howell hadn't won in Tiger's career a span that long. So again, good for Chucky 36. All right, what we've been waiting for. Let's make our predictions for the match. Who wants to start it off? Hallie, you feeling
Tiger.
Good? Tiger?
Tiger all the way.
Any
he's
specific?
Wearing red.
What will it be a blowout? Will
I think it'll be a pretty nice margin.
Okay.
I don't think it'll be over. Like, we might have hope for Phil towards the end, but
right.
I think Tiger's going to win by a mile.
Okay.
Yeah, I hate to be predictable, but I feel like it's going to be Tiger as well. I feel like
he's first of all, he had a better golf year, so he's in theory he's in better form. And then you add the element of, I think, Phil, even though we've written a lot about how they've sort of found common ground and they've become friends, I think Phil still brings out a competitive element in Tiger that is going to make him very motivated to win. So I think that the only thing that I think works in Phil's favor, well, obviously he's a great golfer and has a very good chance of winning, but the one element that I feel like I would give Phil an advantage, I think Phil will enjoy the whole show.
Yes.
Theatrics of the event more than Tiger will. So, and you know, that's not an insignificant factor when you know, it's such a different type of experience that we're probably going to be seeing. Who's going to be able to embrace that more? Who's going to actually perform under that kind of odd circumstances? I guess that's the one thing that gives me reason to believe that Phil could win.
Yeah, I mean, on the flip side though, Tiger brings out the competitive side in Phil. I'm going to shock you guys. I'm going to pick Phil to win.
Wow.
I because to Sam's point, I think he will be more comfortable in this environment. I think he is like so into this match. I think he's really been practicing. You know, we saw on the HBO 24/7, they're shadowing Tiger as he goes out in his backyard and on, you know, his home course. Phil is hopping on the private jet going to Shadow Creek, scouting out the holes where the pins are going to be. He's sick. He's a sick guy, and I think that's going to translate here. I think he's going to win. More to that though, the actual odds themselves. He's +170, whereas Tiger's -200. Like I said before, would I rather? I'm taking the odds. I'm taking.
Well,
like,
okay,
the
you didn't
good
talk
odds
about the odds.
No,
about,
no. I'm saying because of both those things together.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's a combo. I'm saying I definitely would bet on Phil over laying the odds on Tiger. But I just have a feeling. I think, you know, even like as the Ryder Cup showed, Tiger won the Tour Championship. We're all going crazy, and then you know he's not a machine. I mean, and it's a one match play is a different thing, and that's for sure. It's a one round situation, and I'm sure Phil's played this course more than Tiger. I just think there's a lot of these extra. Is Tiger the better player? Of course, but Phil's still a top 50 player in the world, and on any given day, so. I'm going with Phil.
All right,
I hope it's going to be fun. I hope it's worth the $20. I hope they let them talk a lot. I hope we don't hear a lot of Ernie Johnson and Peter Jacobson. I hope we get to hear a lot from those guys, you know, yucking it up and making bets and making more than $100 bets, hopefully. So anyway. All right, guys, it was fun. Got everybody out there, enjoy the match. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts if you haven't done so already. And check back next week to see who our guest is.